Bantam Doubleday Dell Audio Publishing presents Star Wars, Isard's Revenge, Book 8 of the X-Wing series by Michael A. Stackpole. When his X-Wing reverted to real space before the countdown timer had reached zero, Corran Horn knew Thrawn had somehow managed to outguess the New Republic yet one more time. The New Republic's forces had been brought out of hyperspace by two interdictor cruisers, which even now started to fade back toward the Imperial lines. This left the New Republic ships well shy of the Bilbringi shipyards and facing an Imperial fleet arrayed for battle.
Battle alert!
Captain Tycho Selku's voice crackled over the comm unit.
TIE interceptors coming in, bearing 293, mark 20.
Corran keyed his comm unit. Three flight, on me. Hold it together and nail some squints. Corran nudged his stick right and dropped the crosshairs onto an interceptor making a run at Admiral Akbar's flagship. He hit the firing switch, sending four red laser bolts burning out at the target. The interceptor's bent hexagonal wing sheared off in a shower of sparks, while the rest of the craft started a long, lazy spiral toward the outer edges of the system. Whistler, the green and white R2 unit slotted in behind Corran, hooted, and data started pouring up over the fighter's main monitor. It told him in exact detail what he was seeing unfold in space around him. Thrawn had arrayed his forces in a bowl shape, with interdictor cruisers ringing the outer edge, preventing retreat and promoting containment. Corran shivered. And even if we were to punch through the imp formation, we'd still have to deal with the Golan space defense stations protecting the Imperial shipyard. Before Corran could vector in on another interceptor, he heard Commander Wedge Antilles coming through on the squadron's tactical channel.
All rooks, come about. That Golan Space Defense Station is designated Green 1. It's ours.
Ours, Commander?
The same surprise Corran felt in his chest came flooding through Gavin Darklighter's voice.
That's a pretty tough target. We'll just have to be tougher than it is, won't we, Six?
Wedge's reply came loaded with grim irony.
Besides, we have friends coming out. One flight is on me. Five, you have two flights. Nine, you have three. As ordered, Lee.
Throughout the bowl into which the New Republic's fleet moved, massive salvos of energy shot up and down and side to side, filling the area with a dazzling light show. The Golan Space Defense Station loomed larger. Over 2 kilometers long, about half as wide and tall, it bristled with turbolaser batteries, proton torpedo launchers, and tractor beam stations. It could easily put down any of the New Republic ships that made it through the Imperial formation. Corran flicked his weapons control over to proton torpedoes and linked fire so two would go with a single pull of his trigger. Nine has a firing solution, transmitting now. On my mark, free flight. Three, two, one, mark. All four of the X-Wings fired their linked proton torpedoes at one time. A battle station like the Golan sported very powerful shields, and individually fired proton torpedoes would have been unable to pierce it. 8 torpedoes coming in at the same time, aiming for the same point, would overstress the shields, draining them of energy. This would create a critical time window in which the shields would be weakened or would totally fail and have to be regenerated. The 8 missiles hit in a ragged sequence and exploded brilliantly along the station's middle. Flames vomited into space as a blast opened a hole 3 decks deep and vented atmosphere. Corran juked his fighter up and away from the station. For a half second, he thought the Golan's gunners were terribly shaken by the squadron's attack, hence their misses. Then he glanced at his rear sensor display. He smiled and keyed his comm unit. We soften them up for you.
Appreciate it, Rogues. Now, let us do our job.
Two New Republic assault frigates, the Tyrant's Bane and Liberty Star, poured terajoules of laser cannon fire into the Golan. The troops aboard the station fought back valiantly, but found themselves at a gross disadvantage. With each salvo, fewer and fewer of the Golan's weapons fired back. A brilliant flare flashed on the station's port side, and then it went black. Tycho's voice poured through the comm unit.
Lead, two here. I show the Imperial formation breaking up.
Disbelief threaded through Wedge's voice.
Be careful, Rose. Thrawn's got something up his sleeve.
Corin studied his readout. The imp pullback leads the Bilbringi shipyards to us, which Thrawn never would have wanted. What happened here, Lee?
I don't know, Nine.
Wedge's voice came through, solemn and with a hint of hesitation.
Just got a recall order from Admiral Akbar. We're to rendezvous with Home One.
Admiral Akbar waved a flipper-fingered hand at a chair before his desk.
I want to commend you and your people on the run at the Golan Station.
Wedge smiled. I'm just pleased you gave the rogues the opportunity. His brown eyes narrowed. I can't believe, though, that our assault was what frightened Thrawn off. The Mon Calamari sat back.
It wasn't. We've been decoding messages from Wayland.
Wayland?
Apparently it is a world where the Emperor had hidden a cloning facility. Thrawn was using a clone of a Jedi Master to help coordinate his military efforts. And Luke and Leia were there to deal with him. Leia also has managed to establish a rapport with the Nogri. Thrawn had tricked the Nogri into working for him as agents and assassins. But when they discovered the Imperial deception, they used one of the Nogri close to Thrawn to kill him.
The Corellian pilot exhaled slowly as he sank back into the chair.
Thrawn, dead?
That pretty much breaks the back of the Empire's remnants, doesn't it?
It certainly hurts them, yes. We will have to continue battling the warlords, and I have no doubt there are more Imperial weapons of mass destruction lurking out there to catch us like a riptide. But we have gotten past a stretch of rough water.
Akbar paused for a moment.
But there is another problem I need you to deal with.
Yes?
I want you to accept immediate promotion to the rank of general.
Wedge shook his head. Hey, I won that Wraith Squadron bet. Akbar pressed his hands together.
Commander, we have played this shell game, you and I, for years. You don't want the promotion because you don't want to move out of an X-Wing cockpit. I certainly can appreciate your desires, but I also know you are capable of handling greater responsibilities than you have been. And I value you enough to seriously consider letting you remain in command of a fighter unit.
The Corellian arched an eyebrow at his superior. If you're willing to leave me in charge of Rogue Squadron, I guess I don't need a promotion. Akbar sighed.
Commander, you need a promotion, and you need one very quickly. Because your people in the squadron are refusing their own promotions. They're following in your wake, which is a grand testament to your leadership and their feelings for you, but not really fair to them at all. Captain Selku should be at least a colonel. That was the job he was performing in leading the rogues while you were with the Wraiths. Hovey and Jansen should be majors. Horn should be a captain at the very least. Darklighter as well. And the rest of your rogues should be something other than flight officers.
Wedge sat there, his mouth open ever so slightly. How could I have been so blind? My people have all been great, and certainly more deserving of rank and honors than a lot of folks who've been promoted beyond them. I've been so worried about not letting the rebellion down that I've let them down. Fair enough, Wedge's eyes narrowed. Now that you've gotten me to agree to the promotion, it's time you let me in on what else is happening. Akbar hesitated for a moment, then bowed his head.
Very good, General Antilles. How did you know the tide was still rising?
I know you well enough, Admiral, to know you wouldn't have pushed me to accept a rank. unless it was important for me to do so. I figure that if I have rank, it's because I'm going to need to pull it.
Excellent reasoning, which confirms your suitability to what I need you for.
The Mon Calamari pressed his hands flat against the desk.
Thrawn's assault, really, was the last effort by a united empire to destroy the rebellion. There are, however, many warlords who hold sway over collections of star systems. We're going to need to liberate those systems and worlds. Right now, Rogue Squadron is pretty much the only unit in the New Republic with any sort of experience with that kind of operation.
Wedge nodded. System liberation will be a delicate operation. If we go in with too much material, we'll appear to be as nasty a force as the Empire. If we make a half-hearted effort and are defeated, it will cost us lives and undermine our credibility with the New Republic's member states. If we do it just right, we give other warlords something to think about, which might make them more open to peaceful negotiations.
You've distilled 4 hours of Provisional Council discussions down to the key points.
Wedge frowned. Just picking a target will be tough.
Already done.
Akbar punched a button on the holoprojector pad built into his desk. Above it, a little holographic image burned to life. The man had a prosthetic right hand, close-cropped white hair, and piercing blue eyes that seemed to project a cold cruelty. Admiral Delac Krennel, Wedge felt the flesh on his arms pucker.
Yes. He murdered Sate Pestage and took over his holdings, the Cutric Hegemony. It made him the leader of 12 worlds and gave him a fair amount of material resources. He created the post of Prince Admiral for himself. He rules from Cutric and has a fleet of 12 or so capital ships, including his Reckoning.
He's been rather quiet. How can you justify going after him? Wedge frowned for a moment. We're going to bring him to justice for Pestage's murder?
That, and the murder of Pestage's family. Over 100 people perished in that purge alone, and there have been other purges to keep him in power. Krennel's murder sprees give us all the excuse we need to target him.
And the fact that he took the holdings of an Imperial officer and converted them to himself means that by going after him, we're suggesting to anyone else who might be adventurous out there that what once belonged to the Empire is ours. Interfere with us, and you'll lose everything. Akbar turned his head and stared at Wedge with one big amber eye.
Political analysis, Wedge. Had I known you'd take to being a general so easily, I'd have demanded the promotion sooner.
Despite a personal preference for remaining at home with Mirax and getting caught up with her life, Corin Horn did enjoy the welcome home party she had arranged for Rogue Squadron. In the almost 3 years he had spent with these pilots, they'd all become very close. And seeing them without the pressure of combat let Corin realize just how much he cared for them. Ural Quirg, Corin's longtime Gand wingman, came over to him.
It is good to see all our friends here.
True. I'd forgotten we had so many. Corin smiled and nodded at a tall, bearded man who worked his way through the crowd toward him. Corin knew he had met the man in the past, but he couldn't place him.
Sithborn!
Ural looked over at Corin.
What?
That man coming toward us, he was a prisoner on the Lusankia with me. He's one of the men who was missing. Corin started forward, opening his arms.
Emperor's black bones! What are you doing here?
The man stopped and hesitated, the recognition and confidence gone from his expression. I have a message for you, Corin Horn. He raised his hands to his temples and winced. I'm sorry. I know you, but... Anguish entered his voice. I don't know who I am. Corin pulled up short of the man and let his hands drop by his sides.
You were on the Lusankia with me. You served as General Jan Dodona's aide. Your name is Urlor Seti.
Yes.
Urlor Seti.
For the barest of seconds, Corin saw relief in the man's eyes.
Then they rolled up into his head and blood began to stream from his eyes and nose. The man screamed, spraying a bloody mist from his mouth. His back bowed and his bones cracked. Then he pitched over backward and lay in a slowly expanding pool of blood as the crowd retreated from him. Cora knelt by his side and reached out to feel his throat for a pulse, but stopped because he could see he wouldn't find one. Wedge crouched across the body from him.
What happened?
Corin shivered. Ulur Seti was on the Lusankia. He said he had a message for me. I got it. And given the method of its delivery, there's only one person who could have sent it.
Prince Admiral Dela Krennel stalked toward his office, his close-cropped hair having been raked into a rough semblance of order with the metal fingers of his right hand. He would have been concerned about his appearance, save for the fact that he'd been awakened from a sound sleep for momentous news. His blue eyes narrowed. He had a hard time believing Grand Admiral Thrawn was dead. In fact, he'd not wanted to believe the news because he had hoped to kill Thrawn himself one day. Krennel reached the door to his office and shouldered it open. He took two steps into the darkened room, then felt something cold and slender constrict around his throat. Krennel swept his middle hand up and yanked, leaving a garland of garrote wire hanging around his neck. He reached for the glow plate switch on the wall and let the light build, then pulled himself up to his full height and slowly turned toward his visitor. He knew he would make an impression, and given the situation, that impression would be important. And yet, as it turned out, it would be trivial compared to the one made by his visitor. He'd not seen her in years, save for disturbing dreams from time to time. Barely shorter than he was, she wore her long black hair unbound. White sidelocks framed a face that would have made her a rare beauty, but two elements spoiled the effect. One element was her eyes. The left one smoldered a molten red, as if the iris were radioactively bloodshot. The pale blue of the other eye seemed colder than frozen methane, and her stare sent a shiver down Krennel's spine. The other thing that spoiled her beauty was a network of raised scars radiating out from a small puckered crater below her right eye. Krennel studied her closely for a second, and thought he saw enough asymmetry in her face to suppose those scars were a sign of massive trauma that had been surgically repaired. He recalled that Rogue Squadron had claimed to have killed her when they ousted her from Thyfera, but her presence in his office put the lie to that story. Krennel slowly removed the twisted garrote wire and tossed it on the floor between them.
"You had a point you wished to make with this, Isani Isar?"
The woman smiled coldly. "I could have killed you here in your office. Your people would have awakened tomorrow morning with me in your place. It is important that you know. I could have taken over for you in the blink of an eye. So you will believe me when I tell you that doing so is not my intention."
Her words came evenly and calmly, and Krennel allowed himself to mull them over before replying. He searched them for her true agenda, not wanting to accept that she was being truthful with him.
"The second I allow myself to even imagine she does not have another plan working here, I'm dead." "You do have a purpose here, then?"
"The same purpose as always, the preservation of my master's empire."
Krennel forced himself to exhale slowly through his nose.
"So you agree, then, that Mon Mothma's mongrel republic is an affront to humanity?"
"An affront? It is an abomination that cannot survive."
Isar began to pace.
"There are pressures lurking, building in the new republic. Much energy is being deflected into creating a government, but once the structures are in place to allow for the exercise and abuse of power, these pressures will flood through it and tear it apart."
Krennel rubbed his hand over the stubble on his jaw.
"Astute, if not terribly surprising observations, Isar. With such understanding, you could easily see a way to create your own empire."
"Wait, you tried that, didn't you? And the rebels killed you for it."
Her hand brushed over her scars.
"They tried to kill me. They did not succeed."
Krennel noticed her words came without confidence.
She doesn't remember how they almost got her. Amnesia's no surprise with such massive head trauma. Perhaps she thinks she's lost some of her edge, which is why she's come to me.
Are you giving me all this political analysis so I can sit back and watch the galaxy fall into legions of civil wars?
No. I tell you this so you can recognize the opportunity you have to rebuild the Empire and become Emperor.
A brief smile flashed over Isard's face. It will not surprise you to learn that sources on Coruscant have reported to me that you have been the subject of discussions in the Provisional Council. The rebels feel they need to make an example of an Imperial warlord, but they want to pick one and deal with him in such a way that they do not so frighten the others that there is no chance of peaceful settlements later. You are the one who murdered the Imperial Grand Vizier, and so blatantly profited by your act. They think if they wage war on you beneath the pretext of bringing you to trial, the other warlords won't be threatened by what they do to you.
He crossed his arms over his chest. Transparent political motivations won't turn lasers or shield ships.
Isard nodded slowly.
True. But politics can play a leading role in how power shifts in the universe. Think for a moment. As the New Republic strives to redress some of the ills of the Empire, who will be discomfited?
Humans. Humans will have to make do with less, so aliens can have more.
Exactly.
Isard opened her hands.
This provides you with an opportunity, Prince Admiral. You declare your Cutric hegemony to be human-friendly. You will provide a haven for anyone who feels he or she is being abused by the New Republic.
Krennel slowly nodded. When the New Republic moves against me, it will look as though the aliens have enough influence in the Council to use armed force against someone merely protecting the rights of his own species. That should spike fear among humans, and even make some of the other warlords willing to band together, so they won't be made targets.
Krennel watched Isard closely.
So, you come here, you tell me what the New Republic has in store for me, and you provide me with a political program that will thwart them.
Why?
To preserve what little is left of the Empire.
There must be something you want for yourself.
There is. And you will give it to me.
Isard touched the scars on the side of her face.
Rogue Squadron managed to defy me in the past, and I cannot let that transgression go unpunished. I will lay a trap for them, and you will give me the resources I need to destroy them.
Krennel snorted lightly.
Rogue Squadron has led a charmed life when it comes to traps.
That's all in the past, Prince Admiral.
Isard's arctic eyes sparkled.
I've sent them a message. It is bait. And as they follow it, they will move into my trap.
Wedge Antilles shivered, and he knew it wasn't just because the morgue was kept cool. Two droids slid Urlor Seti's shrouded form into a refrigerated drawer. Wedge turned away and looked at the other two of the room's occupants. Corin Horn sat hunched over on a chair with his hands covering his face. His reaction to Seti's death didn't strike Wedge as at all wrong. The death had been shocking. He also knew Corin well enough to know there was more to it than just shock. Seti's death is a defeat for him. Corin gave his word that he would free the people who had been imprisoned on the Lusanki with him. Seti's death opens up the possibility that he might continue to fail in this quest. The woman sitting next to Corin rubbed her right hand along his curved back. Wedge marveled at her calm strength in the midst of such an incident, but that sort of strength was something he had come to expect and admire in Iella Wasiri.
Corin,
she said softly,
there is no way you can accept responsibility for this man's death.
Corin looked up with red-rimmed eyes.
The second I said his name, I doomed him. I might as well have put a blaster to his head and pulled the trigger.
Corin, you know that's nonsense.
Yella's voice developed an edge, and anger sparked in her brown eyes. The person who put that device together, the person who implanted it into your friend, that person killed him. Corin's green eyes narrowed. My heart still feels the guilt. If we'd moved faster to find them and free them, maybe... Wedge shook his head.
Corin, you know as well as I do that we've devoted a lot of time and energy to locating the Lusankya prisoners. When Isard scattered them, she was sharp enough to take steps to make sure we never found them. The secret of where she placed them died when you and Tycho blew up her shuttle at Thyfera. You didn't know that she'd hidden the prisoners, so you couldn't have anticipated the result.
Yella nodded in agreement. And Corin, there was no way you could have let her live, let her run. That kind of evil had to be stopped. And you know everyone who was on the Lusankya would have agreed with you. Corin took Yella's hand in his own and gave it a squeeze.
You're right, of course.
Still, this knot in my gut isn't going away until we find the other prisoners. His voice sank slightly. Or find out what happened to them.
Yella got up and walked over to a stainless steel table. She picked up a small box and wire device and turned it over in her hands.
Well, we have a good place to start with this. It's a nasty little piece of work, and a fairly specialized one.
Yella flipped open the box, which was no bigger than a deck of sabacc cards. She hit a small button, and a 20-centimeter-long cylinder flipped upright. Corin rose from his chair and came over to lean heavily on the table. The machine hooked into Urlor's oral nerves, picking up what he heard. When the chip matched the voice print of my saying Urlor's name to the voice print it had stored, the motor depressed the plunger down through the cylinder and pumped the kill juice into him.
Wedge nodded slowly.
You think the voice print came from your time in the Lusankya?
Probably not. We didn't use names much there. If we used names, we could have provided the imps with clues to what might be happening. I suspect they got it from any of a variety of reports I gave on my time in the Lusankya.
Yella nodded. Which means whoever did this has access to some of our classified material. That's not really a surprise, though, is it?
Wedge raised an eyebrow.
It isn't.
Think about it, General. Ulusetti arrives at a party being thrown in honor of Rogue Squadron, a party you didn't know about until this afternoon.
Word was not that widespread about it, but whoever it was managed to get him in. So, it's safe to assume we have secrets leaking to the enemy.
Wedge sighed, then nodded to her. Good analysis. I hadn't thought that hard.
You haven't had to do interpen analysis.
Yella gave him a warm smile.
At least you didn't have to before, General.
No, but it looks as if I'll be having to apply my brains more than before.
Just in different ways, Wedge.
Yella turned and drew Corin into a hug.
Go home. Get some rest.
We'll have what you need to find out who did this by noon tomorrow. Wedge watched in silence as Corin left the examining room, then turned and looked at Yella.
You really think you'll have enough data to let us start tracking the person behind this by tomorrow?
We'll have some leads.
She tapped the box with a finger. The common components here are fairly low-tech, which means they were probably manufactured on the world where the device was put together. The custom components were modified during manufacture. The mods aren't that difficult to do, but they require technical expertise and suitable facilities. Once we have a world, we can begin a survey of possible people and places.
Wedge ran a hand along the edge of his jaw. What about the toxin?
The easiest thing for us to track would be if it was milked from exotics on a planet where the creatures are not native.
Most worlds require the registering of exotic xenobiologicals, so we can vector in that way. Sounds like a lot of work.
Wedge shook his head.
Where do we begin?
Yella came around the table and slipped her arm through Wedge's.
The start of any good investigation involves hunting up a reliable source of calf, the kind that can keep you awake through an Ithorian production of a Gamorrean opera.
Wedge nodded and took one last look at the device that killed Urlor Seti.
You want to know what scares me the most about this whole murder?
What?
The way it was done, so boldly and obviously. It means whoever did it wants us to come after them.
Yella's eyes narrowed. Calling Rogue Squadron down upon yourself would be ruled suicide by most coroners.
Right. Which means whoever did this thinks they can handle us, is crazy enough to think they can handle us, or just has a colossal hate for us.
Not a pretty holograph.
Yella tugged Wedge toward the door.
Gavin Darklighter swirled the golden Corellian brandy in the small tumbler, then tossed it off. But none of its warmth radiated out to dispel the chill that had settled over him.
The way that man died at the party tonight, it took me back to when we were helping the victims of the Kritos virus. They bled, too. Bled and died.
Aesir Salar nodded mutely from the chair opposite him. She had drawn her feet up, so they disappeared into her silk robe. Of her body, he could only see her white-furred hands and her head, with the diagonal blaze of white fur that ran from her forehead down over her left eye and across her cheek. Her markings made her somewhat unique among Bothans, as did her attitude. Gavin set his glass down on the arm of his chair.
I guess I was hoping, with Thrawn gone, that things would begin to settle down. I mean, I know I'm not even 20 years old, but there are times I feel positively ancient.
Aesir gave him a half-smile.
Ah, you're saying you want to resign from Rogue Squadron? Start a family? Do something else?
Gavin frowned.
Well, the Squadron is my family. You're my family. I don't want to walk away from that.
We both know that someone is going to have to do something about the guy who died, and Wedge and Corin will push for it to be Rogue Squadron.
That seems to me to be the right thing to do.
Agreed. He sat forward in his chair.
As for the other stuff, like starting a family, I think I'd like that.
I'd like to start a family with you. We could get married, make this permanent, and bring children into our lives.
Aesir glanced down at the hem of her gown and picked a piece of lint from it.
I like the idea of being married to you, Gavin. But there's a lot to consider. You do know that it is impossible for us to have children together.
Gavin nodded.
Strikes me, though, that there are plenty of children who need adopting. It would give us a chance to help heal some of the damage the Empire has done, you know?
She looked up and nodded solemnly.
I agree. There is something else you have to know. If we adopt, I want us to adopt at least one Bothan child.
Sure. No problem.
Aesir held up a furred hand to stop him.
Listen to me, Gavin, because it won't be that easy. You know, we Bothans set great store by our families. My family sees me as a disappointment, because while I have garnered acclaim in service with Rogue Squadron, I have not presented them with children. Those children would be well loved, but they would also be fodder for future alliances.
So you're saying, if we adopt a Bothan child, your family will want to exert some control?
Aesir laughed aloud.
How can you have lived with a Bothan for so long, and yet be so polite when referring to our possessiveness?
Gavin smiled. Your possessiveness isn't that bad from my perspective. Look, this would be our child. I wouldn't be looking to interfere with the child's assumption of his heritage. I wouldn't want to try to substitute the human culture for Bothan culture. But I would want to provide some balance. I'd want to show him that different doesn't mean bad. And I'd hope any other children we adopted, be they human or Rodian or Ithorian, whatever, would get that same message.
He got up out of his chair and crossed over to where she sat, then knelt beside her. He reached out and held her hand, stroking the fur.
Look, I know this won't be easy, but I want to try to do something positive for the galaxy.
Sure, stopping some Grand Admiral from reestablishing the Empire is noble and positive, but the way we rebuild the galaxy is by making lives better one at a time.
We can do this, you and I. I want to do it with you.
She leaned down and kissed him on the forehead, then rested her chin on the crown of his head.
You realize, if the adoption goes through, one of us will have to leave the squadron.
It wouldn't be fair for both of us to risk our lives and leave some child orphaned again.
I know.
Gavin let his head rest against her breastbone.
That's a decision we can make down the line.
Neither one of us wants to leave, I know.
But if that's what it takes to make the galaxy better, it's a sacrifice I'm willing to make.
Yella and Wedge had managed to trace the device that killed Urlor to Kominor. Tracing the components had involved good, solid detective work, but locating the site on Kominor where the implantation had happened involved some good fortune. Wedge located a couple of places where some exotic xenobiological creatures had been kept, and as he concentrated on them as a possible source of the venom that killed Urlor, he noticed that one facility boasted a full veterinary surgical suite, complete with droids. That facility had gone out of business roughly 2 years earlier, about the same time Isard had fled to Thyfera. On the face of it, the place looked like an easy target. Weather satellite data and other more covert methods of surveillance indicated no weapon systems in place. Utility records indicated fairly low power and water use for a place its size, suggesting that no more than 30 individuals lived on the site, anywhere between a third and a sixth of the total prisoners estimated to have been on the Lusankya. To get the prisoners out would require a commando strike. The New Republic assigned their two top units to the raid of what the locals called the old Xenovet place. Team One was led by Colonel Cap Dundo, a Deveronian who'd worked with the rogues in the past, and Team Two consisted of the Katarn commandos, led by Captain Page. Page and his people had worked with the rogues on their mission to Borlaeus to liberate that planet from Imperial hands. Both teams had been covertly inserted onto Kominar. Wedge ran over a briefing with the latest intelligence. Then the pilots mounted up and waited. A few minutes later, Wedge's voice crackled through the headset built into Corin's helmet.
Rogues, we are good to go.
Finally. Corin turned to glance back at Whistler. Now we make good on the promise.
Prince Admiral Krennel rounded a corner and found Isard seated in a huge chair at the heart of a small arena. Around her, monitors and holoprojectors danced with countless images. Her gaze flicked to the data card Krennel clutched in his artificial hand.
I see you got my report.
Anger surged in Krennel, but he kept it in check.
You allowed them to hit your facility on Kominor.
Isard nodded.
I'd expected them to arrive in a week or so, not quite this soon. Chances are some of the prisoners I left to starve there are still alive. Pity. But they were useless to me anyway. They knew nothing of value, nothing beyond what I want them to know.
Krennel nodded his head once curtly.
What they know could lead the New Republic to suspect that one of my worlds is the location of more of your Lusankya prisoners. That will be enough to bring the New Republic down on my neck.
Oh, I expect so.
Isard's smile broadened.
This is unacceptable. I will not tolerate the loss of even one world of mine.
Krennel narrowed his eyes.
You have been here for 2 weeks, have requisitioned a fortune in equipment, have authorized payment to agents all over, and so far have only succeeded in losing personnel and turning prisoners over to the New Republic. This is no way to deal with our enemies.
Isard slowly shook her head. Now the New Republic believe they are invincible. The fact is, we will defeat them because they have this weakness.
Krennel snarled. I have never believed in lulling an enemy into a false sense of security. Only by standing up to the New Republic, in an even fight, will I be able to convince them I am too much trouble to take. I can and shall do that.
Isard shrugged.
I suspected that might be your reaction, and I have planned accordingly. You will still indulge me, however, in our political pursuits, yes?
Krennel nodded slowly, then gave Isard a wry grin.
You are very good at the political manipulation of people. Almost as good as I am at killing them. If you confine yourself to what you are good at, I will as well, and our partnership will have a long future.
I will be happy to limit what I do, Prince Admiral. If you will agree to a request.
And that is?
If Rogue Squadron survives its next encounter with you,
she smiled frostily,
you will leave their destruction entirely in my hands.
Krennel smiled carefully back.
And if they do not?
Why then, Prince Admiral, I will just find you bigger and better targets.
Izard bowed her head in his direction. If you do manage to kill them, clearly nothing will be able to stop you.
Admiral Ackbar hit a couple of buttons on the keypad at the head of the briefing room table, and Krennel's image burned to life above the holoprojector plate.
As you have all been informed, Prince Admiral Delac Krennel will be the target of a series of operations. The method by which we go after him is going to have to be very skillful. It is our hope that this operation against Krennel will convince our enemies that they do not want to become our next target.
Ackbar opened his hands.
Krennel is not an idiot, but he is in a difficult position. He has roughly a dozen capital ships, a mix of Imperial Star Destroyers and Victory-class Destroyers. He has a dozen worlds to protect. If he concentrates his ships enough to hammer us, we attack the worlds he leaves open.
Admiral Ackbar hit more keys, and a spherical representation of Krennel's realm replaced his image. A dozen worlds were linked by glowing gold lines that marked transit routes.
Kutrik is Krennel's capital, and for that reason is well defended.
Another world on the display grew up to displace the image of the realm.
This is Lename 3. There is nothing about it that is vital, but taking it away from Krennel will result in noticeable, though minor, shortages of goods in the rest of his realm.
General Horton's psalm nodded. It would get his people thinking that the stability he's offering is not likely to last very long.
Admiral Aretha Bell leaned forward in her chair.
Are you saying that higher prices will provoke a revolt?
Psalm shook his head.
Not exactly. Krennel is offering his realm as a safe, peaceful, and stable place where anyone is welcome to make a home and prosper. Taking the Nade 3 will make the hegemony a little less prosperous.
Ackbar held his hands up.
Your points are well taken. Washing away one of his worlds will provide the biggest shock for his people, while the shortages will become a constant reminder of it.
Ackbar hit another button on his keypad.
Flooding into your datapads is the preliminary operational plan for the assault on the Nade 3. Our capital ships will kill or drive off Krennel's capital ships. Then we deploy ground troops to take key factories, energy production centers, mass media delivery centers, and the capital. Once troops are on the ground, we will bring in a rising tide of reinforcements and supplies. I believe pacification of Lenade 3 should take little more than 2 weeks if Krennel does not launch a counter-assault.
Yellow Isiri closed her eyes, then slowly exhaled. With the next deep breath, she caught the scent of hot and strong cap. Her eyes snapped open, and she spun her chair toward the doorway.
Mirax Terek extended a steaming mug toward her.
I figured you could use this when you called and canceled dinner with us this evening.
Thanks. I can use it.
She accepted the mug from Mirax and inhaled the steam.
I'm sorry to have canceled dinner with you and Corin, but analyzing the data from the Kominor prisoners' debriefings is taking forever.
Mirax cleared some data cards off the small office's other chair and sat down.
Anything to clarify the report that Isard is alive?
Yella took a sip of cap before answering.
Corin shouldn't have told you that.
True, but since he figures she's the one who sent Urlor and murdered him, Corin also figures I'm a target, so he wants me to be careful.
Give it up, Yella. You know I'm not going to tell anyone.
The intelligence officer sighed.
Several prisoners say they saw her and heard her, but they're in pretty bad shape. I can't give their identifications too much weight.
She waved a hand at the datapad monitor on her desk.
Still, I've been going over the reports we all made at the time of Thyfera's liberation, and a couple of details don't seem to mesh well. First off, I've not been able to find any indication in any record or anecdote or anything that Isard was capable of piloting a Lambda-class shuttle.
Mirax nodded.
That makes it less likely that she was in the shuttle that Tycho blew up.
Still, didn't Corin have sensor readings indicating someone was on board?
That's right. But I also noticed something else. There were two comm frequencies being used by the shuttle. Isard conversed with Corin over one, but I don't have any record of what sort of data was flowing over the other. So you think Isar was having the shuttle flown remotely from Pythera to make the rogue think she was escaping? If it got destroyed, no one would be looking for her. Mirax's brown eyes narrowed. Still, it doesn't mean she's back in action. Why would she lay low during the whole Thrawn thing? Yella shrugged. Isar, help an alien Grand Admiral? I don't think so. She probably just crawled into some tiny hole and licked her wounds, hoping Thrawn and the New Republic would kill each other. Yeah, and she did have some wounds to lick. She lost Coruscant. She lost Thyfera. She lost her own private superstar destroyer, Lusankya.